This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, my guest is Lisa Klein Ransom, and I've been looking forward to talking to her. The third book in her trilogy, it just came out today, and it's called Bean Clam. It is a fantastic book, and I'm really excited to welcome her to Joy on Paper. I missed the first two. I don't know why. I read them, actually, but I didn't get to do the interviews. So I'm so happy that she's here for the third one, because this is an amazing trilogy. But right now, I get to turn to a woman who I, you know, before when she was on the program, I liked her, and I thought, gee, she would make a nice girlfriend. I'm rethinking that. Andrea Bartz, how are you?
Hi, Patsy. I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Okay. Well, the new book, We Were Never There. Whoa. I don't know. Do you have any girlfriends left?
It's actually amazing that after reading We Were Never Here, anyone still wants to be in my life, knowing the dark things that go on in my mind.
It is frightening. when I emailed you and I said, you give me the creeps, Andrea. I said that in the nicest way, because right now I have found, particularly in the past year, during this pandemic year, I love psychological suspense books because I get into them, I forget all the other problems in the world, and just think about the story. And you managed to do that with all of your books. But with this one, woo, we're in for a ride here, a journey. Let's just say a real journey here.
That's for sure.
Oh, where do I start? I always hate to give things away, so I'll let you tell what you want to say. But I will tell people that there are so many nuances to this story, and it is so much fun to keep turning the pages. And there are just some things that I just loved, and I'll get to that. But what do you want to tell people about the story without giving too much away? Because that ruins it. I know, of course... Now, having read with The Herd and just knowing how you write, I knew I was in for some real scary things here. But tell us what you want to tell people.
Absolutely. So We Were Never Here. It's my third thriller, and it is about two globe-trotting young women who meet up every year for the trip of a lifetime. And, the story begins with them together in Chile. And on the last night of their trip, they kill a backpacker in self-defense and find themselves with really no options except to, bury the body and try to get out of the country. But what's especially disturbing is that this is not the first time that one of their trips has ended in bloodshed. So it's a friendship story. It's a travel story. It's really about how these women's relationships is stretched to the limit as they, bury their second body and try to get on with their lives. And there's a cat and mouse with the authorities trying to close in on them. And also their sort of friendship, being bound by this trauma and by sort of the need to trust one another and just the walls really closing in every direction. And it's my first thriller that's not a mystery. My first two thrillers, The Lost Night and The Herd, were murder mysteries. But this one, it's not a whodunit.
We know whodunit real fast. And the two friends, of course, as always, you're so great at writing about characters. And tell us where you came out with Emily and Kristen.
Yeah, so Emily and Kristen are best friends since they went to college together in the Midwest. And now one of them, Kristen, lives in Australia. So they sort of keep their relationships, their friendship tight by going on these amazing trips every year, these reunion trips. And so a lot of those details were based on my own life and my relationship with a very good friend named Jennifer, who I know from New York, and now she lives in Australia, and we do travel together. But that's about all we have in common. So they're both, Midwestern girls. They think of themselves as sort of wholesome, sweet, good people. And through this sort of series of trauma, they begin to doubt one another, to question their relationship and see it in a new light. So it was just really fun for me to write this character-driven thriller, which, by the way, is the August Reese's Book Club pick.
Well, I know. I was going to mention that. We have to mention.
Sort of track their friendship throughout this incredibly, difficult and scary and sort of pulse-pounding part of their lives.
Well, it's pretty great when you're selected for Reese Witherspoon's book club.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, this is something. This is something. And then, of course, it was most anticipated book of the year by Oprah. I don't know, but all of them were just waiting for this book with anticipation because now after, after this period of time of reading both The Herd and the Lost Night, we know that we're in for a wonderful thrill. And we enjoy seeing how things unravel and all the threads that, that you've used to weave this story. I thought to myself as I'm reading it, you must have had fun with this.
Oh, absolutely. It was so fun. It was so fun. I wrote, with a murder mystery, you have a very clear question in mind. It's there's a dead body, who done it, right? And so when I started this, I had much less figured out. I just sort of dove in with this concept of these two best friends who really care about each other and adore each other doing this terrible thing together. And I just kind of kept questioning, how would I feel going back to my normal life? How would I feel, dealing with my new boyfriend, with my life back at home, as well as this, having these horrible secrets. And so a lot of the twists and turns in this book really surprised me as well. And they were just sort of a result of having as much fun as I could with the relationship between these two women and sort of that tension between living your daily life and smiling and acting normal and knowing there's this horrific thing in your very near past, your very recent past. I had a lot of fun writing this. And I also really love capturing these remote destinations. I'm a travel writer in normal times, pre-2020. And so I wrote about these places that I have been lucky enough to be at myself, like Chile and Cambodia. And, some of it takes place in rural Wisconsin. And it was just really fun to sort of capture these settings, especially I was finishing this in the pandemic, and so it was when we were all kind of stuck at home. And so I hopefully will help readers sort of travel by reading this as well.
Exactly. I thought it was lots of fun. And not that many books are set in Chile, so I enjoyed that. I love the reference to Pisco.
Yes. They start out at a Pisco distillery.
So yeah. So it reminded me of the first time that I ever had Pisco. It was at 7 o'clock in the morning at the Tower Hotel in London. And I was sitting in the lobby waiting for someone. And these two lovely gentlemen, beautiful, handsome, gorgeous guys, were also in the lobby. And they started talking to me. And of course, they were from Chile. And they started asking me if I had ever had Pisco. And I said, no, I was young. I was a globetrotter too, but I always did it by myself. And looking back on it, I'm sort of glad I did. And so they say, well, you have to try Pisco. It's like milk. And I, and one of them ran upstairs and came back with a bottle of this Pisco and gave it to me at 7 o'clock in the morning in London. And I say, oh, and he said something like, this will transport you to Chile. Oh, yeah.
I love that. I don't think of it as a breakfast drink.
No, I don't. I don't.
When in Rome,
So it was so funny. And so when I read that, I thought, oh, that's nice. This is the kind of thing that I think is so much fun to discover in a book. All these interesting little things and really sort of whet your appetite to travel. I traveled years ago, and of course, a lot of my travels were related because I read Helen McGinnis books and books in the 60s and 70s when I was young, and I traveled to those places because of that. So I have a feeling a lot of people are going to say, oh, let's head to Chile.
I mean, I hope so. I guess when it's, you know, really safe to be traveling, I hope this inspires people to get out there and experience the world and see all the amazing stuff that's out there. I would love that if it inspired some kind of travel boom.
Well, and we hope that we hope in the future people will be able to take advantage of that kind of thing again.
Exactly.
Wow. You know, so you did a lot of traveling. And of course, one of the things about your books, you are able to put people in locations, and that's wonderful. But when you write a book like this, so many of my listeners are really fascinated in the process. So how do you write? You write the whole story, and then you go back and edit. Do you edit chapter by chapter, or do you wait till the end of the book? How do you do that?
Right. So I am a pantser, not a plotter, for those familiar with the terms. I write without an outline. So I start with this premise, like I mentioned, and I sort of write the first draft in order to find out what the story is, in order to discover it. So I call the very first draft my draft zero, because it's not even a first draft yet. It's such a mess, and I'm aware of that, but it's sort of me figuring out how these characters interact and what happens to them and what they make happen. So I get all the way to the end. I'm keeping a running list of notes as I go of like, oh, I just realized, you know, she has a sibling or something. And I'm going to need to go back and make that work with what's already there. I get all the way to the end, and then I go back to the beginning and I do a first really heavy revise before anyone else sees it. And that's when I sort of, you know, wrestle it into the first draft. And after that, I am giving it to my beta readers, I'm getting their notes, I'm doing another revision, and then I'm passing it off to my editor. And then it's, you know, being read by somebody professional, so then I get the global edit, do another really, you know, major surgery to get it into shape. And then our last pass together is going to be the line edits, where we're really looking at a micro level, at the paragraph and sentence level. So, you know, for me, it's just like getting it out. Some people call it a vomit draft. I think, you know, draft zero or discovery draft is a little bit nicer.
Yeah, I think zero is nicer.
Yeah. But I do the whole thing to learn what happens to these characters. And then I sort of go back and shuffle everything into place that I've already written and do some heavy cutting and revising to make this sort of mess into a cohesive story.
And during the process, so often the characters take over and sort of put you in a direction that you might not have planned to go.
Oh, absolutely. This story, everything that's a twist in here, I myself did not see coming. Every reveal that, you know, readers are shocked by, I was shocked by as well. So it was really fun to write because I was sort of like compelled to write to learn what happened next, which is just the best feeling as an author. And of course, it was really hard at times, and writing is super hard, and I don't want to take that away from anyone listening who's thinking, but wait, writing's hard. But in this case, I just sort of let the characters, I figured out their personalities, I figured out their sort of stakes and their deep wants and what they were fighting for and what they were sort of wrestling over psychologically, and then I let that play out with all sorts of actions and reveals that I did not see coming.
And when you go back, do you think deliberately about whether it's the dialogue? Do you analyze? What do you like best writing, the dialogue or the exposition?
I think the thing I love writing the most is like the environment and the exposition and describing scenes. And one of my beta readers always ends up slashing entire paragraphs, and you're doing real estate porn again. You're doing real estate because I'll spend way too many words describing the interior or describing the setting and the distance or the landscape. I'll just go deep, deep, deep. And she's like, no, we need the story to move forward. And so that's probably what I enjoy writing most. Dialogue is very fun for me to write. I like capturing sort of like the little simple sentences, but I end up probably revising and scrapping and redoing dialogue the most because it's sort of one of the last pieces to fall into place. Because We Were Never Here, it took me a long time, even after I knew the narrative arc, to really get the relationship between the two women right. And once I had it figured out, I had to show it in their interactions and in their conversations in every scene. So there was a lot of, you know, scrapping, you know, keeping the setting the same and then scrapping what they had said in an earlier draft and trying again with a new discussion that sort of moved the plot forward and demonstrated where each character was psychologically and motivation-wise in that scene, in that moment.
Well, I think this, the whole concept of doing a psychological suspense, that, you know, it goes back a long ways, you know, you've really captured this very nicely, this style, and I can see why, you know, people are saying, whoa, you know, we're waiting for that book to come out, because it is exciting. It's this reveal, and as you said, the twists and the turns in it make for an exciting read. Do you ever, like, when you're thinking about it, I mean, have you ever created your own word? Do you think about metaphors? What do you think about from a technical point of view, because you're a professional writer. So how do you look at your work from that point of view?
When I'm actually drafting, I tend to get a little too flowery with my first drafts. And so I'll, for example, use a few different similes or metaphors, or, you know, pieces of figurative language to describe one thing. And then part of the revisions is going and sort of choosing the strongest. I intentionally try to use very strong and sort of chewy and unexpected verbs, I think, and not, you know, rely on adverbs and not rely on really sort of spare expected verbs. I think that just makes a narrative more interactive for the reader, if they can really experience how the narrator is interacting with the world. So instead of, you know, grabbing a door, they might, that's not a great example, I should have come up with something better, but just coming up with interesting ways to describe a motion that they're doing so that you really sort of feel it with them. So I'm cognizant of that. And then when I'm revising, when I'm looking at my own work, you know, time and space really help. So coming back to something, you know, putting it aside for a bit and then coming back to it for revision really helps me see it with fresh eyes. Or, you know, one of the tricks, like printing it out or reading it on my Kindle so that it physically looks different. People talk about just switching the font can be really helpful for looking at my own work with sort of an objective, fresh perspective.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think people really have to look at it in different formats. I know one person who she wrote and wrote and wrote, and she had never printed even one page out. And I said, I mean, I couldn't handle that. I see things. Well, you see things differently. You find things on paper that you don't see on the computer screen, and you find things in Kindle that you don't see on the computer screen. It's very interesting, isn't it, the process?
It is. It's incredible how different it is just being able to experience it as something other than a Word doc or a Google doc.
What do you think about when, have you listened to the Audible versions of your books? Because which one was it? I think it was the other one, the Last Night. Yeah. Oh, you have some good Audible books.
I know. I've always been really lucky to have the audiobook producer kind of involve me in choosing the narrator or narrators via the actors. And so it's really fun because I get to sort of home in on somebody whose voice matches what the voice that I was hearing in my head when I wrote this character. And so for We Were Never Here, it's really exciting. We have Becca Tobin. She's an actress known for Glee and some other projects, who is reading it. And she just, it's you know, it's a weird thing to listen to your audiobook, because they will do things that you didn't expect with a sentence or with a conversation with some dialogue. And so for me, I have to just sort of step back and look at it as, like, this is a different interpretation of this book that I wrote, and it's going to be different in everyone's mind. And just trust, you know, that the audiobook producer and the audiobook voice actor know what they're doing.
Well, they do. They've done a great job with you. They've done a great job. I've listened to the first two. I haven't listened to this one yet, but I just listened to the sample, and you're right, the voice is great. And of course, when the day comes that, and I don't think we've had an announcement yet that any of them have been optioned. Have we? Or have they been optioned?
So all three of my books have been optioned, but I can't go into details on any of them at this point.
I mean, I would be shocked if they weren't, because, I mean, they are very cinematic. Of course, it's going to be fun when that happens, and then you see what they do, you know, with the book. I think because of the way you write and because of all the, really, the twists and turns, that you are really going to make some script writer very happy that there are things to work with in this with these books. So, I had a feeling there had to be some options in the works, and I hope that when you have a deal, why don't you contact me and come back on and announce it? Because I know my listeners, I have some of my girlfriends who read The Herd, and they all said the same thing, like, oh. Is it a movie? I said, not yet.
Not yet. No, I would love that. Okay, so when We Were Never Here, when there's an announcement, I'll get back to touch so we can chat about that, because they've got a really, it's an awesome team putting it together, and they've got some really cool ideas for it. But I wish I could tell you more about
that. Well, you can. Well, when you're ready, you know, I don't get a lot of, you know, breaking news here, but you know, on Joy on Paper, but that would be fun. That would be fun for me to have breaking news. Oh, announcement. Because I know it's going to happen for you, and you deserve it, because you're such a fine writer, and it's just fun to read your books. I just appreciate it so much when you come on the program, because I love to bring to my listeners books that will give them that break they need from reality. Isn't it funny that horrible psychological romance, not romance, well, there's romance, suspense, with a little blood and I don't know, blood and guts. It's so much better than the news. So
we all love escaping into a fictional horrible world, right, where things are terrifying, but it's at a safe distance and fun to read about.
Yeah, and it's only going to last, the horror is only going to last for, well, it depends how fast you read, but, you know, for 5 or 6 hours for most people, I think, and less for me. It doesn't last long enough. Your books could be longer. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to see them on film. And, of course, I'm sure you're working on book number 4 already.
I sure am. I'm actually currently in that revision stage. So when there's more to talk about there, I'll have to come back.
Well, absolutely. And, Andrea, tell us your website.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm the author, again, of We Were Never Here, The Herd, and The Lost Night. My website is andreabarth.com. A-N-D-R-E-A. My last name is B-A-R-T-Z. I'm also on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter at Andy Bartz, A-N-D-I-B-A-R-T-Z. And I would just love to connect with you.
Great, because you notice she's getting very Hollywood here, because this is Hollywood.
No.
When she said no, yes, you say your name and you say the name of your 3 books, that's very Hollywood. Because,
well, I figure, you know, people probably are driving. People are
exactly. No, it's good. You know, this is what you need to do. This shows now you've raised yourself to a new level of professionalism. Because in the business, when you're an actor, you say the name of your movies just to remind everybody. And so we're going to do it again. The new book is We Were Never There. And the other book.
We Were Never Here.
Oh, no, we were never here. I was never there. You were never there. We were never here. And then, of course, The Lost Night, which, I really like that Audible book. I tell you, if you can, listen to that Audible book. And, of course, The Herd, which all my friends think should be a movie tomorrow. They want to see it on streaming video already. Okay, so Andrea Bartz, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. And it's B-A-R-T-Z. And we want people to remember you, because you are a powerhouse. Now, you know, Reese Witherspoon loves you. So we all love you.
Thank you so much, Patty. Thank you for having me on.
Okay. Look forward to breaking news next time you're on, okay?
All right. Thanks again. Have a good one.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, she's so cute. Okay. We're going to play. We are going to play Book Buzz from Devon Miller.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. Something that I loved to go to every year in elementary school was the book fair they would have in the school's library. And I know so many other children were excited to go just like me. Another child who was excited about their school's book fair was Layla King, the main character from the book Layla and the Missing Dimes, written by Chastity Williams and illustrated by Whimsical Designs by CJ. Layla and the Missing Dimes is a story that promotes friendship, truth, and honesty, and it's dedicated to the author's daughter, Layla Chase Diane King, who passed away. In Layla and the Missing Dimes, third grader Layla King is excited to go to the book fair knowing exactly what she wants, but when she goes to pay for her item, she notices that she's short of a dime, and it makes you wonder, where could it be? When going to the book fair myself, it was always scary going to the register wondering if I had enough to buy the items I wanted, but thankfully, I was always glad to know that I could take home the books I wanted and read them again and again and again. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. And I am very excited. My next guest has written an amazing book. It's one of these books that it comes to you and it touches your heart. And I am so thrilled that she's going to be on in a few minutes. I'm just waiting now. Wow. You know, this is a wonderful time to tell you that if you read books, if you love books, it opens your heart and your mind. And there are so many things that you can learn from reading that can touch your heart and will actually change your mind on different things. And I hope that all of you will find out that, you know, something like this, with this kind of excitement that I get from reading a book, that I find it, sometimes it's overwhelming, a book that is so powerful. And it can be the slimmest of books, a small book, and yet it has power. And sometimes a book that is written, perhaps, I mean, it's geared for children, it's actually a book that every adult should read, because with historical fiction, you learn something. You learn about things and about places, and mostly about how people's lives are touched. And with this book, I'm just thrilled, I can tell you, to welcome to Joy on Paper, Lisa Klein Ransom. The name of the book is called Being Clem. Hi, Lisa.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Wow. Oh, what can I say to you? I'm so honored, really. You know, I speak to a lot of authors, and I love them all. But then once in a while, I get an author who just is awe-inspiring. And you this book, Bean Clam, of course, it's a third book, and they're all great. But I tell you, I was so touched by this story. And I wanted, I got this feeling, I wish I could just, you know, buy a million of them and just walk around handing them to people, children and adults, because adults should be reading this book. This is, in just a simple, you could say almost a simple children's book. It's so deep and it's so touching and it's so beautiful. I got tears in my eyes from the first chapter, but there's also so much, there's humor, there's love, there's compassion. It's a beautiful story.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Well, you can tell us about Bean Clam. As I said, even now, I get emotional when I think about it. I think about this first chapter, how you write about this story. It's amazing. The writing is fantastic.
Oh, well, you're truly making my day here. So thank you so much. Wow, it's such a treat to talk to you. So we first meet Clem in 1946 at Haynes Junior High School in my debut novel, Finding Langston. He appears as one of the title characters, Schoolyard Bullies. So we see Clem slowly transition to Langston's first friend in Chicago. But now, in Bean Clam, he's, as we know, he's now at the center of his own story. So he's funny, he's smart, he's likable. But Clem's also really worried he can never live up to the legacy of a father who died during the Port Chicago disaster. So I never knew much about the Port Chicago disaster, but I discovered it in the Steve Sheinkin book, The Port Chicago 50. And it's a story of the naval base explosion that killed hundreds of black servicemen who were loading ammunition at a base in San Francisco Bay during World War II. So he's trying really hard to cheer up his grieving mother and fend off attacks from his two teenage sisters, Annette and Clarice. And he's scared to death of just about everything, but especially the thing he's supposed to love, which is swimming. And he hates that everyone continues to treat him like a baby. So, you know, this is the story of Clem. He's Clemson Thurber Jr. to his mom. He's Clementine to his sisters. He's CJ to his cousins. He's Clem to his friends Errol and Lyman. But Clem really isn't sure which one of these he really is. And he knows he's supposed to be some version of his father, which is strong and brave. But it's really hard to be like someone you can barely remember. And so that's kind of the story of Clem. He's just trying to figure out who he is.
Well, you know, as I said, when I read the first book, of course, I was just drawn to Clem. But in this book, he's so, you write so powerfully about him. I saw things through his eyes, and I ached for him. It just gave me such a thrill when he would try to make his mother laugh, the silly things he would say. He's so touching. It's so beautiful. And that's the word I kept thinking about as I'm reading the book. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, Lisa Klein Ransom is an incredible writer. And of course, you've won awards. I know that, I don't know. There should be the biggest award of all. I think you just hit everything out of the ballpark with these books.
Oh my goodness! Thank you so much.
I've already bought this book for a number of people. I've already ordered it because I said to myself, and this, we hear about racism and we talk about racism. But sometimes if you put things in perspective, looking at it through a child's eye, and a child that you really admire, like we admire Clem, because of the way that he hugs his mother, because of the jokes he tries to make, I tear up when I think about him. And I would like to just take this book and start handing it out to people and say, read this book and stop being mean to anybody in your life. And think about how hard, you know, that scene at the ironing board. I mean, I cried. I cried when I read that. Because
That scene at the ironing board. So, you know, it's interesting because I think that, you know, as a writer, I mean, most writers would say that writing is all very personal, right? And so you bring a lot of your own personal stories to your writing. And so I am the youngest of three, and I always felt like this real connection to my mom, and I always felt that it was my job in many ways to make sure that she was happy and that she was okay. My mother worked the night shift as a nurse, and I remember being home with her, and she was always like incredibly tired, and I always felt the need to like take care of her in some way. My mother was perfectly fine and capable of taking care of herself, but I always felt this responsibility for her. And so when I was writing Clem, I think I was keenly aware that I was writing a part of me too, like this need to take care of your mom and make sure that she was okay. And that scene at the ironing board where his mother, who is this incredibly proud woman and is college educated, but yet is forced after the death of their father to have to try to find a way to care and provide for that family as a college educated woman. And now she's forced to work as a maid. And here's this woman who's so proud, but she has to take this job. This is all that's available to her. And she's really losing grips with, you know, with her sanity here. And she's just losing it. And he sees this. He sees it, but he doesn't know how else to help her and how to care for her. And he sees her just ironing this maid's uniform. And he doesn't know how to help her. And he's standing there and holding her hand and watching her iron the same uniform over and over again. He's scared for her. He's scared for himself. And, you know, I know that feeling of being afraid and not knowing what to do and being the youngest. But, yeah, there's a lot of the personal in there. A feeling of helplessness as the youngest, but also, you know, just wanting so much to help.
Well, I thought it was such a beautiful scene. And I cry when I think about it, just thinking about it. I want people to stop. I just want them to stop all of it. I want people to, when you read this book and this, you know, we hear, of course, so much about Chicago. It's funny, you know, I've traveled all over the world. I'm a globetrotter. I've been everywhere, lived all over the world, been to almost every American city, and I've never been to Chicago. So I was stuck at O'Hare Airport so many times. I don't want to.
Yeah,
I'm sure you can relate to that. So I don't know Chicago like, you know, so many people do, and you know, you hear so much about it today, and you know that at one time things, you know, things have always been difficult. And there are so many Clems out there and so many young people, boys and girls, who have to, you know, life is a struggle. And I'm not saying it's just, you know, just black kids, all kids, have faced this thing. If, you know, and of course, for Clem's mom, who has a college education and at that time couldn't get a job, well, it's very difficult. And so you write about it in a way that I think people who are just need this kind of reinforcement to know that we're all sort of in this together. We have this wonderful world. It could be so beautiful and we could all be so happy, but we have all of this nonsense around us. And if people could just feel for a moment like Clem feels and feel that love, I think, it would make all the difference. And that's why I admire your writing. And I think that, you know, as I said, because I read a lot of books, and there are books that people will, you know, you write and they come out and they're out for a year and people read them, and a few years later, nobody's reading those books again. But I feel that this trilogy, and particularly this book, is a kind of book that people will be reading 50 years from now, 100 years from now, to understand the times, both in the times that it's written about in 1946, that period, and also today's times, because the period that you wrote it. It's one of these books that will have a very long life.
Oh, well, I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. And I think that what you're saying is so true. I think that this is, to me, the beauty of writing and the beauty of stories. It allows us to really walk in someone else's shoes, to really understand the experiences of others. That's what stories do. They connect us in a way. And I think that when we understand other people's stories, it helps us to heal. It helps us to not create the distance. It's the distance, I think, that sometimes makes it easy for us to hurt other people and to pretend that their lives don't matter. And so when we have that distance, we can do the things to people that have been done in history. But stories keep us close together, keep us bonded. And so, you know, you have to keep writing these stories from history and showing people what have been done and showing people the ways in which we are really connected, that these stories, it's not just Clem's story, it's the stories, you know, of all of us, of boys and of young people who are the youngest, with who have, you know, older sisters who drive them nuts, or who have mothers who are really sad, or who are grappling with grief, who have families who are loving, who love school, who love the library, who are dealing with bullies, who are conflicted. Like, these are all of our stories. So, I love writing them, and I hope that these stories are finding their ways into people's hands and help to do a job at connecting all of us.
Well, I think you've done it with this book, and I think that with the trilogy, and I it's a shame that we're sort of in this terrible pandemic-y time that you can't go out and sort of travel around the country as I think you should with a book like this. It's not the same that you know having large meetings, large groups of people where you can talk to all types of people, all colors, all religions, all, you know, I know that, for example, if this was a different time, you'd be invited, like, to my synagogue and be a speaker there, because we would just love to hear this story. We would love, you know, to share this wonderful book with all of our people. Unfortunately, it's not the same. You know, you can't have these big gatherings. So I know that it's difficult for you to get out there and promote the book, but I hope that everyone out there will do their best to buy this book. Buy this book for every kid. If you have a kid in your life, buy this book. And even if you don't have a kid in your life, I think you should buy this book. This is a book that adults should read, because in a way it takes you back to your childhood. As you said, something, it reminded you, the ironing board, a scene reminded you of your childhood, as it reminded me of my childhood. And I know in my case, I was always protective of my father, and I spent a lot of time at the ironing board when I was a child ironing his uniforms, because he was a truck driver, but he loved to look good. He always was very spiffy. And so that just touched me, and I thought, this is such a human thing, to have this connection to the parents that we love, the parents who mean so much to us. So I hope more people will just really help promote this book.
Well, that's so funny. I also iron my parents' uniforms. Both of my parents were nurses, so I also iron my pants before.
Well, so perhaps that's why. Nowadays, I, in a way, I feel sorry for the younger generation because they don't have to iron clothes. Isn't that funny?
It's an iron. And they don't, you know, my kids, when they went out to college, they're like, don't forget, we have to get you an iron. They said, for what? And I thought, oh, where have I gone wrong?
I know. It's the same way with my son. He went out. But I thought it was actually very therapeutic when we were young to iron. It's a way to really make you focus on things, on details.
I still iron. I still iron on Sunday mornings. I take a couple things out. I iron them. I spray them. And
isn't it funny? Oh, we're funny. Well, it's that human connection. I mean, I was connected to you when I read this book. I'm crying. I'm thinking, well, how did she write this book? Is she crying? And I'm sure it brought tears to your eyes. But also, I love the humor. It is so cute. I won't, you know, give away anything. But the little things he says, it makes you really love Clem. And I hope that, you know, you do. Of course, you already won the, I don't know, I'm not up to date on, the first book, of course, got the Coretta Scott King author, it was a honor book, right?
Yes, it did. And it also got, I have to point out, it got the Scott Odell Award for Historical Fiction. I was incredibly proud. Yes, so, yeah, and you know, and I have to say, you know, you mentioned about speaking to people. I last year, I think I spoke to more groups of people than I have ever. I think I spoke to about 40 schools last year virtually, because I may not have been able to do that, actually, without the pandemic, but I spoke to schools in Seattle and California and Nebraska and Michigan, all over the country. So it was kind of actually nice to be home. And I know it was a difficult year for many, but I was able to speak to a lot of students and a lot of adults even. So it was nice to be able to get out and speak about, you know, at the time it was Finding Langston and Leaving Lyman. So it's nice to know when your books are, you know, reaching a wider audience. It really touched me. It really, really touched me.
And of course, like me, you love libraries. So that was a big part.
Yes, I do love libraries. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, I come from a small town. And when we got to Detroit and I found a library, I was like, it was heaven to me. It was just heaven. That's, you know, that was my idea of heaven. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to thank you so much for being on the program today. And the name of the book is Being Clem, released today. And the author is Lisa Klein Ransom. And Klein is spelled with a C, C-L-I-N-E, Ransom, R-A-N-S-O-M-E. And you have a website you want people to go to?
I do. It is lisakleinransom.com. And Lisa is spelled L-E-S-A, which is also a little unusual. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, if they put a L-E-S-A, I think it comes up almost automatically. Really a wonderful book, very touching, and a winner. You're a winner. Clem's a winner. And I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. You have written a book filled with joy, actually, and just been an honor to talk to you.
Thank you so much. It was a real treat to talk to you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Lisa.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Wow. This is an amazing book. I'm telling you, you start it. Well, I read it in one go because I couldn't stop. But anyone who can write those first three pages, it's just mind-blowing. It's just, you think, where'd she come from? How'd she do this? Beautifully written. And really, if you know anyone, especially any kids, get this book, send it to them. And if you don't know, just order it and send it to some children's hospital, because there are lots of children's hospitals where the kids are there and they need books to read. And Devon Miller, a Do we have Devon Miller? We played Devon Miller. I wanted to talk to you for a minute. You know, Devon Miller has become, he's getting the Sunshine Ambassador Award. And this is really exciting. And he's going to be honored in downtown St. Petersburg on August 12th. On Thursday, August 12th, and he's winning the and he was awarded the Sunshine Ambassador Award. Wow, I'm so proud of him. We have time. Let's play the Jim Lamb literary gem, and then I'll come back and say bye to everybody.
Onomatopoeia. What's that? Pizza topping? A language spoken on a planet long ago and far, far away? Something the Three Stooges used as a punchline? Wrong, wrong, wrong. I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. Buzzes, hisses, clang, bang, sizzle. Great words all, but less than they seem. Why? Because they're words that don't stand for what they are. They phonetically imitate what they describe. For example, when I said buzz, you probably thought of a bumblebee or a front door buzzer. When I said hiss, a snake may have come to mind, or maybe a leaky tire. Clang, a bell. Bang, a gun. And sizzle? A big juicy steak. But it's not just things that make sounds. How about animals? The cow goes moo, the pig goes oink, the duck goes quack. Guess what my favorite sound is? If you said you are right. Some of my favorite word imitations are in The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. While I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. Can you hear it? Tap, tap, tap. Rap, rap, rap. I did. So the next time you write about a clock, make it talk by saying tick-tock. That would be a great way to make your story more dynamic, dramatic, and engaging. Me, wow. I'm Jim Lamb, and that's a little something-something about onomatopoeia.
Okay, thank you, Jim Lamb. That was so nice. And again, a literary gem from a poet and somebody who spent years working on newspapers, and he knows what he's talking about. So it's lots of fun that he's going to be giving us these literary gems just so that you can start thinking about when you write how to, just the terms that you should know when you're writing. Anyway, oh my goodness, it's been a great day. Remember, one of the things I always tell you, that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. And she has a new wonderful series that's just coming out at the end of the month, Haunted Haven, and you can pre-order it, and it's Carol J. Perry. Go there and to Amazon and pre-order her book, and it's just, it's wonderful. And also a special shout out to Rita Moreau, whose book is also out, and it came out on Sunday. So, I have to say goodbye and say big thank you to Big Ed in the control room, because I always try to say something nice to somebody every day. And he saluted me, and I saluted him. And everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. It's going to be glorious weather, I think, all over the country. Bye-bye now.